You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Crowpot contains language and themes which may not be suitable for anybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Crowpod. I'm not really sure which show this is. I don't know if it's a Don't Ask Me No Questions or Secondhand News. Or, you know, it's whatever the hell you want it to be. And that's brought to you by our good friends, the famous headwear.co.uk and blueroomart.co.uk. Don't forget, I picked out a couple more winners last night just for the hell of it. All you got to do to win stuff, support the show, go down, hit the link in the show notes, blah, blah, blah. You guys know the drill. Danny's back. We've got more shit because, you know, whatever. It's international break. We might as well bitch about something because there's nothing else to do.
Empty the tank, Shane. Empty the tank. How you doing? How's things?
It's earache and I hate international football. But, you know, outside of that.
Yeah. It's the worst time of the year. Anytime international football rolls around, everybody just has a collective fucking groan. It's not, unless it's a major tournament, I don't care.
Yeah,
I have zero interest. And it's just a void of 2 weeks.
Can we just give, you know, these big 32 clubs or whatever what the fuck they want to go fuck off? And then let's just host international tournaments with like a reasonable, you know, look, Liechtenstein's never going to make a UEFA, right? You know, they're not going to a Euros, okay? It's not going to fucking happen. So let's just pick like the teams that always go, you know, and then just do it. Like, get rid of all this shit. I don't need friendlies in fucking March.
Oh,
I don't
that
need
Nations League thing. Fuck
that. Just the most nonce-ridden fucking shit in the world, man.
They discovered,
because that's what we were doing over here this week, the CONCACAF Nations League. Yes.
They finally discovered and finally, in the wrong way, listen to people and figured out, oh, wait, they don't like friendlies. Oh, let's find a convoluted way of making friendlies
noticeable. Let's take the Eurovaz and tack it on to God.
Oh, it's horrendous.
I don't even know who the fuck we were playing last night. I know people were bitching on Twitter. I don't care. I'll watch a U.S. men's team game against like Canada and Mexico if it's on and I happen to be at a place where I can watch it. But outside that, I'm not going. You know, it was like that guy had this on Twitter earlier. Adu's goal that got scrubbed off against Slovenia back in 2010. Still don't give a fuck, right? Because what did he do in 2010? He scored the winner against them that won us the league, and also we won that group anyway. So it didn't fucking matter what the hell Michael did.
And I bet you the only thing that Moeidu really remembers from that time is what he did for Rangers. So
yeah, I mean, I've talked to him. That's true.
On a similar note, though, Shane, I did have a rather productive, I think, midnight discussion with presumably some other people on Twitter from Scotland. Goodness knows what they were doing up at that time about the
waking
Super
up.
League. Yeah. Well, at 5 a.m. Come on now. I get the good proddy work ethic. But come on.
Yes.
Somebody mentioned something about it was one of these shitty things that came out through transfer rumors, whatever Twitter account, shitty fucking aggregator account,
France Football 24 or whatever.
Yeah. Something about some guy from Saudi Arabia, obviously trying to put it in the kind of the news cycle that Saudi Arabia is going to get a team in the Champions League.
Yeah.
I don't know how true that is, but when UEFA starts saying it, then I'll probably believe it. We had a productive brief discussion about it where we said, see, all these big teams, if they could just fuck off and join a Super League already, because my interest in football outside of Rangers completely disappeared. Probably around the time where the Messi-Ronaldo narrative started. Because then it was like oh yeah, we're not, you know, La Liga before then was the great Barcelona teams and all the Ronaldinhos, Luis Figos and everybody. You could name like the full team sheet.
Yeah.
And you could, don't get me wrong, you could do when Messi was at Barcelona because it was still a great team. But the narrative shifted and then the attention was taken away from the rest of the league. It was like a juiced up version of Scotland. It was a two-team league. One of the two of them would win it every season and the full focus would just be on the players, not the teams.
Until Simeone came along to cut their balls off.
That guy is just a fucking treasure, isn't he? But then PSG and City happened, and then the whole game was just completely shut.
Well, Chelsea. I'm glad to see Chelsea going back where they fucking belong.
Yeah, right?
You should never been there. You had a good 15, 20 years, whatever, with Roman's money, and now it's done. Tough shit, you know?
They did give us peak Mourinho, though.
Yes.
Which is a valuable byproduct of that. But yeah, it gets really tiresome. It's the same teams winning the same things all the time, and it's just a really passive audience.
Everything in Europe now, certainly at that level, is just tourist. You know, it's like putting a pro sports team in Las Vegas.
How did that go? Shane?
Oh man! Well, we're gonna find out again in about 3 years. So. Jesus.
I mean, how do sports in Vegas go in general?
The Vegas Knights kind of were, I don't know. You watch any NFL game, the hockey's a little bit tougher because of the way the stadiums are set up. Well, let's just look at the F1 right now.
Yeah,
right?
That's what I was getting to. I was thinking that's not...
I mean, the Flamingo, resort casino is selling suites trackside right now for $18 a night if you want to hustle on down to Vegas. They've been emailing like ticket holders at the Circuit of the America, you know, the one down in Texas and like racetracks anywhere. And now they're starting to use like season ticket holders for other sports. I mean, they're basically giving away tickets at the fucking airport. And then last night they go into free practice one. Right, you have all these businesses on the strip. Like, there was an Outback Steakhouse on the strip last night, completely empty. There isn't an empty Outback Steakhouse anywhere in America at 10 o'clock at night. And the one on the strip in Vegas was empty because nobody wants to fucking be in Vegas for this shit. Nobody goes to Vegas to watch sports. And then they don't bother. Now, there were defenders of anything F1 does, right? Kind of like the people defending Michael Matheson, you know? That no matter what the fuck this group does, it's right. Saying it's a new course, how could they be expected to know that the sewer drains would pop out of the fucking ground? Now, I gotta think F1 in what, 75 years or so now, has like a checklist for road courses that includes, say, securing sewer drains so they don't pop out of the ground, potentially killing a driver or spectators, anybody. Thankfully, there's no fans there, so they don't have to worry about the spectators. But what, Sebastian Ocon hit one, Carlos Sainz, well, if you go find this video too, there's like the in-cockpit view from Fernando Alonso, who misses the one, going, it's on a, like the backstretch, he's full speed, full tilt, somehow sees this thing and avoids it, and then you can see him look in his mirror right as Sainz hits it, because, but I mean, two drivers hit these fucking things before they stop the FP1. I mean, it's just an utter fucking nonsense, and now the Oakland A's, who have moved in the past, but have been in Oakland for, what, 50 years, give or take, 60 years? 70 years, actually, 70 years. Are going to move again now to Las Vegas. Again, nobody, you're going to play baseball in Vegas in the summer. Even at, you know, in a domed, air-conditioned stadium, it doesn't fucking matter. And no one, absolutely no one goes to Las Vegas to watch sports, and everybody who lives in Vegas already has a team in another sport.
It's almost like setting up shop in a desert isn't a good idea. Although I do wonder how, with the F1 going on, I do have a moment of pause for thought for the mole people, the underground people that live in
Vegas. I thought you were talking about Michael Beale. Never mind.
But maybe he is there. Maybe that's what he's doing with his time.
That's what his agent told him to do. Go live in the tunnels underground in Vegas. Shut the fuck up.
I bet you those people are absolutely thrilled about F1. I can just imagine
racing over their heads all the time. Yeah.
I can just imagine like that brain cover didn't pop up out of accident. It was just one of them fucking around
with just a big stick popping all the drains out.
It was my immediate thought. It's probably lost on the listeners, but honestly, if you look into that in Vegas, it's quite.
There's a good documentary. Was that Vice or something that did a documentary?
Yeah, I think
about
so.
Go. Yeah, there's people that live in the streets all the time underneath Vegas. Mm-hmm. So, God damn it! There was something. I was talking to it. I got a buddy of mine who works. You know, he covers the NHL, and beat writer for one of the teams, and they were out there in Vegas, and this was like. I mean, weeks ago, mm-hmm. right? Not in the recent buildup to this thing, weeks ago, where they had to facilitate this thing, they built like temporary overpasses for other roads. He's like, everything was fucked up for the past month. And then, mm-hmm. you know, obviously, once it gets closer to the event and they start shutting even more things down, it just got even worse. I mean, like, the strip is empty. Complete. Again, if you want to go... If you've got the money and the time right now, you can hop on a plane and get a suite at the Flamingo for $18, overlooking the track. Like they wanted to make Monaco 2.0, right?
Yeah, I mean,
this is like kids riding go karts through fucking Motherwell, right?
Which I'm certain they do in Motherwell.
Maybe that's where Alan Burrow's got his start on his jet setting rocket powered career. what a wonderful fuck. You know, and the best part is, you know, you think they would have learned from us with like Operation Tango and some of this other shit that we've done, or just making stuff up on Twitter and driving people fucking crazy.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, they didn't. And on top of, well, one, highlighting the fact that they fucked their ticket dispersal program in the first place and pissing it. Like, that's the best part is that us doing this drove their season ticket holders, you know, all eight of them, fucking crazy over how they handled this thing. And then they had to shut it all down for 3 days to try to figure...
That's the funny thing, because none of them seem to have a fucking clue what's going on, because I'm pretty sure somebody was saying you need to have a purchase history to be able to buy a ticket at all for...
Well, that would make sense, yeah.
Yeah, and yet, of course, it's just convenient for a club that is so terribly run, quite clearly, that they just want to use that as an excuse. Oh, well, there was Rangers fans. It's just, it's people on Twitter, you fucking idiots.
It's the thing, you know, you like the usual voices who want to hold, again, look, and this is not to defend our CEO at all. We're going to get to that one in a little bit, but who will want to, for the sake of pointing out just how poor Rangers are, will defend anything else's cash. But what did he actually do at Motherwell that was good, right? Outside of happened to be a supporter who somehow worked his way into the seat, which... just goes to show how fucking piss poor run Motherwell is, right? That's not indication of his skill. That's an indication of how just abjectly horrible Scotch football is on the whole.
I do get the impression that if you really wanted to, it's like running for politics in the UK as well. If you really wanted to, you could just wriggle your way in there.
Yeah.
I think anybody could be CEO of Motherwell. I don't think it really makes a fucking difference.
I mean, we had Craig Mather, so, you know.
it's not beyond the possibility, is it?
No. Well, I loved it, like, the fact that, like, Aberdeen headhunted him or something. I'm sure, like, Motherwell were like, God, please leave. Please, we don't want to buy you out. Please leave. Oh, my God, they actually believed it. Well, yeah, I mean, well, all you got to do is find a big enough weapon, you know, one that's a larger weapon than you, and Dave Cormack just... happened to be the perfect plant in that regard. So, yeah.
I refuse to believe that Dave Cormack's a real person.
He's just a Twitter avatar.
Yeah. he looks like somebody wearing a face mask. Like an actual, like, looks like he's in full prosthetics. He's just a bizarre individual.
Well, he's a half and half scarf guy, too, except half of this, it's Aberdeen and Atlanta. Like, what the fucking hell?
Don't forget about that dodgy transfer. Who was it? Like a right back?
Oh, the one they kept sending back and forth. Yeah. I forget his name. Really it's South American. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that was some real like Fergus McCann kind of hide the money sort of shit there. Oh, no, we're just loaning him. Look at that. Oh, who's paying him? You got us. You got us. But I think MLS was kind of the one to put it. They were like, you can't keep doing this shit.
No. Between them and Hearts, again, with their benefactors pumping in more money to that club. What is it? It's like
another £4 million this week.
Yeah, and the same guys put in like 30 million quid by now. Jesus, what are you trying to do with that football club? Because they are nothing but just complete and utter fucking losers. The money that they spend is basically like Rangers, but on a smaller scale. It's the money they spend for just how shite they are.
You know, for them, because they've gotten much, much worse over the years. But it's like, do you not remember, what was his name? Was it Romanov or whatever, Lithuanian? Mm. He was literally going to part your ground out to make it a little store. Like, you know, and you guys stood there and watched this fucking happen. So what are you doing again? Like, you're operating well out with your means to, what, get horsed in Europe in, like, the Conference League or whatever the hell it is.
Yeah.
Whatever it's called now. I don't even know. Is it the Conference League? It is the Conference League.
Yeah.
Yes! Yeah. I got the name right.
He knows football. it's really impressive because they spent... We spoke about it earlier in the week, Shane. It's really impressive how often they whinge about the lack of resources they have in comparison to Rangers or Celtic. The minute that they get money, they just piss it up a wall.
Yeah.
I love it. I love it.
Like Danny Wilson, you know, they kept offering him more and more money on the contract, and all he kept saying was like, "Dude, like my bird wants to move to Colorado. Like that, it doesn't matter. Like, no, here's another $4,000 a week. Are you not getting this? Like, it doesn't. What are you doing right now?"
it is quite impressive that they pay anybody that amount alone. But yeah, they seem to be going that direction between them, Hibs and Aberdeen. Yeah. That doesn't seem sustainable at all.
No. Yeah. Well, you know, thankfully you've got like Dundee doing the long-term investment with Scott Foam. You know, that's the kind of sponsorship money that the SPFL could only dream of, really.
Well, they wriggled their way into being Celtic's new feeder club now that Hibs are going to be, who is it again? Which English club is it?
Dundee just like how many Strachans can we hire before they pay attention to us?
Oh my goodness,
that is
impressive.
I'll tell you, one more dumbass thing before we get to you know like actual Rangers stuff, but and also speaking of owners that sit there and cry poor and do all this other shit, but the Chicago White Sox here, anybody watch The Last Dance, the great Chicago Bulls documentary? Of course, part of the underlying theme in that was Jerry Reinsdorf being a cheap ass bitch and, you know, allowing that team to be broken up by Jerry Krause. But he owns the White Sox also, which you probably caught during that documentary, too, when he was talking about when Michael wanted to play baseball. So last week, I think it was, or week they had a play by play, you know, a comms guy, Jason Benetti, who's one from Chicago, two, a Sox fan, and three, so fucking good that Fox has had him on national broadcast for like the past 3 years now, right? It's fucking brilliant. I mean, it's just objectively funny, calling a game, insightful, entertaining, good. I mean, just everything. Good.
He's like your Ally McCoist then.
A bit, except, you know, he's not an ex-player. And also, well, he has cerebral palsy, right? And he's overcome this to become a fantastic, amazing broadcaster. But about a week and a half ago, he left to go to the Detroit Tigers, who are one of the White Sox biggest, you know, closest rivals in the same division. And, you know, there was a lot of, I think, parsing of words around it, which usually means if you just give this shit enough time, something's going to come out. And the White Sox have a guy who's kind of a fail son, incompetent in their front office, who's just, you know, stuck in there for no fucking reason and provides nothing. Can you see how this bridges through to what we're going to talk about? But Yeah, but Benetti was talking about this in an interview. He said, I had somebody say to me when I asked for more respect and basically demanded more respect just in the way I was treated, they said, quote, respect according to normal human beings or respect according to Jason Benetti. So this is the White Sox senior VP of sales and marketing. Oh, a marketing guy, head of marketing. Ooh. Brooks Boyer, who I think may have opened the White Sox up to a lawsuit here. Benetti really wants to pursue it. He might just be happy in his new gig and be rid of these fucking people. But yeah, another. Well, look, and also he's got a surname that starts with a B. Man,
Burrows, Esgrove.
Yeah, Boyer. There you go. This guy should be emptied immediately, but of course that means they'll probably give him a new contract with the White Sox.
Yeah.
Because that's how they work.
It seems like these guys are 10 a penny in sports.
I get
why, though. I think there's an attraction in being involved in sports, rubbing shoulders with all these famous people, and probably the money involved more than anything.
Plus you get to be like, oh, look at who I was hanging out with last night. Yeah. You know, like you get to pretend like the players are your friends instead of they absolutely fucking hate you and can't stand you and hate the way you disrespected one of the team leaders on his way out the door and other stuff like that. You know. I'm talking about Bisgrove again, not Boyers.
I mean, there's one other person we can throw into the mix there as well. A certain David Graham, who was just hanging off the coattails of players the entire time that he was at Rangers. And yet another one that had absolutely no qualification to be in that role. So, those people are just abundant in the industry, clearly.
Yeah. No, I worked in this shit. You know, I mean, I worked in sports and I worked in journalism. And, you know, it doesn't matter what realm you go into with this kind of stuff. You know, I mean, you got them in sport, you got them in politics, you got them in music, you got them in fucking whatever. Anywhere. Oh, you get assholes like this, you know.
But there's something about sports that just seems to attract that kind in particular.
Yeah.
The spotlight that's on them, even in a kind of menial role, like any other organization, the head of marketing, sales, communication, whatever else, is to the general public not known. Whereas, you know, certainly in football and definitely at Rangers, the support seems
when you insert yourself into every photo op and you know, every goddamn opportunity possible, any trophy hoisting, anything, then yeah, I mean, people obviously start to learn your names, but as you said, probably shouldn't. I the hallmark of competent executives, well-groomed, well-versed, competent executives, is that we don't talk about them.
Nope. Right?
If you're doing your job, every once in a while we'll be like, hey, you know who's doing a really good job? Like with Rab, right? Rab does a very good job, despite everything awful that has happened and all Rab has ever known is shit at Rangers, right? Mm-hmm. Despite all that, he persists. And he's very good at what he does, especially working within the constraints he's had at times throughout this tenure. We don't have to sit here and talk about Rab often. You know, it's not like when Rab isn't on screen, people are going, where's Rab? Why isn't Rab here? However, this feckless prick just can't get out of his own way to save his life. Yeah. And, you know, again, like I said, he's just like, you know, like I why do I know Alan Burrow's name? I don't give a fuck about Motherwell or Aberdeen yet. Here it is, because people like him cannot stop injecting themselves in the conversations. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's the problem, because they're at a club where it really doesn't fucking matter who they are or what they do to the outside world. So in that situation, yeah. I mean, I do understand with Rangers that there's a certain extent where they do have to be front-facing. They do have to show face and you know, people can actually... That should be part of the accountability thing, right? But, like, Ross Wilson's one of the perfect examples. People never stop fucking talking about him. Even in that... what's his fucking name again? That interview that I was talking about earlier in the week.
Gibson, sir.
Gibson. Yeah, I keep forgetting his fucking name. But even in that interview, he's like, oh, Ross Wilson's doing such a great job. This was 8 months ago, bear in mind.
Yeah.
And yeah.
While we're preparing his documents to sack him. Yeah.
Well, were we?
No.
he was preparing his fucking, his
exit strategy.
I understand they have to be front facing, but at the same time, just do a good job. Yeah. Then people can talk about how good a job you're doing, rather than just you injecting yourself into things and making it look like you're doing a good job.
That's the difference,
supporters need to distinguish between the two.
Right, because the people that are talking about the good job Bisgrove is doing are either, well, one, you know, as we discussed last week, some people are ill-informed, and that's fine, because some people just want to watch football, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I get it. I want to just watch football. I don't want to talk about this prick. Or you have the willfully ill-informed who, you know, choose to ignore, but maybe aren't quite so. But then you have the people willing to come out and carry water for him.
Yeah.
And spill that water on the other fans, hoping that, you know, some of this like drips off onto them and people just say, and for what reason? Again, we went through this, right? We had executives like that. We had Brian Stockbridge taking meetings at a Starbucks, you know? Meanwhile, they are literally stealing from the, they are taking anything that's not, but they tried moving Struce's desk, but they couldn't get it through the fucking door. You know, there wasn't anything they wouldn't sell. And meanwhile, you had people and groups out there willfully and purposefully defending the actions of these people right until the moment that they were ushered out the door.
Well, the former marketing and commercial director, now our esteemed CEO, was he not keen to get an office for himself in London?
Yeah.
I mean, it kind of comes back to what I said about him earlier as well. Like, he should be sort of ingratiating himself and really entrenched in the culture of the club and the Glasgow culture as well. Because we can't just sit and chant about being a British club and that's all fantastic and everything, but our roots are in Glasgow as well, and I don't think the club does enough around that either. And it was just yet another example that I feel I can point to where he just continuously failed to understand his consumer. And it's shit to talk about football fans like that as consumers, but that's his remit, to understand his consumer. Yeah,
right.
And time and time again failed it. But that's just in the same vein as we're talking about Burrows and all the rest. It's all about them. It's all about what they do, and not about the kind of collective goal as an organization. That's where Rangers falls down anyway.
You know who had a govern focused marketing strategy to roll out ahead of the 150th anniversary?
It's almost like that's what we should be doing, but no, getting the communications director to lift a wee flagpole out and unfurl it, and then just fucking
a 2x3 flag, and look at that
sum total of their efforts. But yeah,
it's all right, because the Parks still have 4 tickets in the director's box every week, so that's all that matters, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's it.
I mean, I do understand, certainly from a Leicester's point of view, we fucking drone on about this guy over and over again, but it's the fucking litany of issues over the years, right? It's all the problems that we can point to in evidence. It's not things that we're just making up on the spot.
No.
These guys, not just Bisgrove, everybody else, and the point that I made about talking about Gibson was that it also comes down to investors. We're now seeing it with the accounts that came out earlier in the week.
Let's grab the break quick. Because we did have some more stuff from the accounts we wanted to get to earlier in the week, and we just ran out of time. So, there's some stuff with the wage bill. There's some other shit in here that we just didn't have enough time to get to, because if not, it would have turned into a old school crow pod and lasted for about 4.5 hours. And I was in no fucking mood to talk to anybody for that long the other day. So,
and who the fuck wants to listen to that?
I don't want to listen to this right now, and I'm on.
No, neither.
God damn. All right, quick break. Right back, part two.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
All right, welcome back to part two here on the Crow Pod, whatever Friday show this is. I'll pick one out at the end, but we'll see what I feel like this, because it feels more like secondhand news, but usually that's just me. I'm not sure. But either way, it's brought to you, of course, by our good friends, the famous headwear.co.uk, and of course blueroomart.co.uk. We're giving away stuff from them this month, just like we do every month. Go down, hit the Buy Me a Coffee link, go to support.thecopelandroad.org. $3, pitch it in, gets you entered for the drawings, not entered in another fashion, but gets you into the Trambola. You know, maybe your name comes out at the end of the month. It's not bad. Like I said, I think I've already, there's been like four or five people I've already picked for this month. So, and it's Thanksgiving week now, so I'm in a good mood, because you can't ruin my mood around Thanksgiving, no matter what the fuck you do, because I know there is a day coming, 6 days away, where I simply wake up, drink, cook food, then eat all the food while still drinking, and then fall asleep on my couch at about 8 o'clock at night. So it's fantastic. Although, you know, this year sucks because we're not playing on Thanksgiving. The last couple Europa League runs, we've had that. Oh, I'll get to enjoy it this year. Oh, it's fucking, I mean, that's perfect because that's mid-afternoon. That's right about when people are coming over to eat, and I can sit there and be, don't fucking talk to me. I'm watching Rangers. Leave me the fuck alone.
So, yeah. So, basically, your day is set up exactly, almost exactly like Christmas.
Yeah. Kind of, yeah. Except minus Christmas is shit.
It kind of is, to be honest.
I don't like decorating. I don't like all the pageantry. And
this is the podcast people come to just shit on everything, isn't it?
Yeah.
Christmas.
Fuck it. Don't need it. American Thanksgiving, perfect. Every holiday should be exactly like this. Christmas, get off. I don't want it. Get out of here.
No, I had, aside from the food and drinking, I had the... The experience of Canadian Thanksgiving, which was kind of just nothing.
Isn't that just like a Wednesday, basically?
Yeah, yeah. Just go sit in the pub and other people are in the pub at the same time on a Wednesday. That's pretty much it. Yeah.
See, that's one of the nice things I do. I don't know, because it's a little bit smaller group I'm cooking for this year. But usually I've got like way too many leftovers because I cook everything. And so, you know, by the time I wake up on the couch, say at about 9:30, and decide I need to go to the pub because I drank all the beer in the house, we usually go to Mary's and I take all the, because yeah, I mean, there's like, people don't have families, right? It's a day where you should just get to enjoy a good meal with some people that you like and fucking whatever. Yeah. So I always take down like two or three trays, you know, big ass, those big tinfoil, massive trays of like leftovers for all the guys down there that maybe don't have any. We'll see. I don't know. I might just prepare like a second whole meal for that kind of thing this year. Like, do the first meal, get that done, and then I could start on the second one, which again means I can stay in the kitchen.
That's always a good place to be in those times. Sometimes the leftovers are better than the...
Oh, 100%. Oh, my God. No, you got to, like... Yeah. You know, and the thing, like, with Thanksgiving, too, you get that sandwich, like, the next day or 2 days later, where it's, like, you know, it's the turkey and the stuffing and cranberry sauce and gravy, and, like, you can throw some mashed potatoes on there, you can get some, and, like, you throw all this onto a sandwich and then, you know, you can feel good because you're just eating one sandwich, not 4,000 calories of food. No, my friends, I'm eating one turkey sandwich. Thank you very much. I'm watching my weight. You'll notice I'm now eating white meat.
is 4,000 calories not just your average daily intake for a North American?
That's vodka for me. Oh, for the average North American. Yeah.
That's what I've learned since being here anyway.
Oh, man. Yeah, so speaking of overblown fucking things, our salary budget does not look... Well, it didn't look good in the context of the accounts by themselves, right? I mean, when we talked about this earlier in the week, I think, what was it? Is it 51% of our turnover, right? Give or take?
There or thereabouts. Don't rely on us for exact numbers.
And this is just playing staff. This isn't, you know, everybody else. Yeah. It's a tick over 50% just on playing staff salary alone, right? Which... wouldn't be horrible if we weren't paying a bunch of other incompetent fuckwits either to A, not work for us, or B, to work for us, to hire people that will eventually not work for us that we have to pay.
As well, Shane, if we're paying that much for players, then we have to get every last drop of value out of them.
And yes. Don't. No.
You know, that wage bill screams to me that we are paying squad players towards the higher end of the wage structure.
John Lundstrom is one of the highest paid players in Scotland, if not the highest paid player in Scotland.
There's other guys, you know, there's guys that can do a job that are on 25-30k a week, which is just completely out of line. I mean, two of them we can probably evidence through Davies. Davies was at Liverpool, so you can make the safe assumption that he's going to be on that. Or probably much more.
Yeah,
probably took a bit of a hit to come to us.
Yeah, but what was that hit in comparison to what he was? It always comes back to that problem. You know, I always term this like the Lee Wallace conundrum, right? Yeah. When everybody was leaving and Lee Wallace stayed, and everybody, it's great that he's staying. No, who was going to pay Lee Wallace what we were paying him at that? He just signed a new contract. He wasn't going anywhere. Nobody was going to pay him what we were paying him. And that's the thing, you know, whether it's Davies or Tom Lawrence, right? Yeah, I mean, how much do we overpay to sign these guys compared to what they were going to get from like a championship side or something like that?
Well, the thing with Lawrence was, though, if people can remember, because it came out publicly, didn't it? I'm pretty sure Derby County's wage bill was out in public and very broken down by player. How true it was or not, I'm not sure. But given their financial problems... more than likely, and I'm pretty sure Warren's was on 25 plus K a week, which for a guy that's never really been any higher, I know he was at Man United as a youth player, but for a guy that's never really been any higher than the low end of the championship, and he's pushing, 29, 30 now?
Yeah.
And his injuries that have been more recent prior post him signing and everything, that's obviously a bit of a problem. But it was fucking Paul Heckingbottom that came out and said that, you know, I could be conflating either him or Davies. He said Rangers blew us out of the water.
A
team that just came down from the Premiership.
Yeah.
Maybe we shouldn't be paying that amount of money for players that will never see even the top end of the Championship. Never mind being in that league. Never mind the fact that the players that we've typically signed overall, yeah, we've had some good ones. Cantwell represents value for money, whether he's consistent or not. Tavernier certainly represents more than enough value for money.
Yeah.
There's a few in there, but there's a fucking long list of players that are just utter dog shit that have been at Rangers and have came from that league or lower. I mean, just look at Warburton's time as well, even his first season in the top flight.
Well, like Matt Crooks, Joe Gardner, fucking...
Even Windass. I mean, Windass still represented some value. We got a good fee for him, which is fine. But it's still, if you're paying this that much for a player at Rangers, even nowadays, the wage bill should be inflated from where it was when we got up to the top flight. But if you're paying that much for a player, you better be getting every bit of value out of him. And I don't see that with these guys. They can do a job. Don't get me wrong. Ben Davies has looked reasonably competent since Clément has came in. That's great. It's,
yeah, but that's the expectation of somebody that we're paying 30,000.
We spent £4 million. We spent £4 million on him, and probably north of 30,000, if not more, per week. We can do so much better. Yeah. It's not even a question. And yet we have and have had in recent windows everybody telling us how great a job Ross Wilson is doing. He's the reason we're in this fucking mess because we kind of alluded
him and the CEO who backed every fucking decision that he made to the point where he got installed as CEO somehow, you know,
and gave Beal full control and all the rest. But the thing is, we were talking about this in earlier weeks, weren't we, about January and what change can really come from that.
Yeah.
We're going to really struggle to get people out the door.
Yeah,
who's going to want to take, other than the odd mental fucking championship team that can actually afford it, which there's not that many, surprisingly, given the trickle down from the Premier League. But, you know, if you're trying to shift a Tom Lawrence or a Ben Davies or even Kemar Roofe or John Lundstrom in their final 6 months of the contract, I don't see that happening. Same with Deso, same with Lammers. If we want to move people on to bring people in, it's going to be a real struggle. And it's why I said in the last podcast that we're probably going to have a front load of money from the investors to do it.
100%.
And that's
I think, to, you know, because we've had this. Well, actually, you know, a couple. I put out the call for questions, and Craig Gallagher and Neil Buchanan, both good listeners here, but they're asking about one who is a consistent name that people are baying for lately, and it didn't get help last night. But, you know, Shanklin, I don't – we're going to have to overpay Hearts for him because they're not going to let him go to us for cheap, right?
Yeah.
And then what's his actual he's not the starting number nine. I think he could be a perfectly useful player – in a system, and that we can, you know, if we have to adapt at halftime or something like that, certainly in the league. But for what we're going to have to spend to get someone like him,
if he was a free transfer or a cheap transfer or that, if he was sub 1.5, maybe sub 2 million at most, you could justify it. You could say it's a striker coming into his prime. Yeah, when he plays for Scotland, he contributes, so that's a good indicator of his level. But you get these Scottish players every now and then, they look head and shoulders above everybody else in the league, but that's not a difficult thing to do.
No.
I'd take him in a heartbeat if he was going at a reasonable rate, but it's just not going to happen. If you're going to be spending that kind of money on a player, which I would guess probably 3 or 4 million, if not more, that Hearts want, given that it's us that they're dealing with as well. Yeah. And that's one of the other arguments for the struggle to sign good young Scottish players. We're almost priced out of it sometimes. Shanklin's pushing 30 as well. 29 in August, I think. So it's a difficult one to justify. I wouldn't have him starting over Danilo, and I'd argue we even need better or somebody that offers a little bit more than Danilo. You know,
well, it comes back to Europe, it comes back to, you know, the absolute void of long term planning. Is he better than Antonio Čolak? No,
exactly.
You know, who was here and didn't want to leave.
Yeah, but in the same vein, Shane, we can say, you know, we'd all rather have Čolak over Dessers, but Čolak's still not the answer.
No, he's not. But he was here. We didn't have to spend £4 million.
Exactly. we spent at a loss to replace him with somebody that's worse than him.
Yep.
But that's the continuous issue. We keep downgrading. There's no upgrade. I don't want to hear talk about the squad for the foreseeable future. I want to hear talk about the first 11. Clément needs, in the next 2 to 3 windows, he needs probably 5 or 6 nailed-on starters. That's what Beal needed in the summer. That's what Gio needed as well, I think. So how are you going to support that?
Gio asked for it, just like Gerard, Gio asked for it, and the person that was there wouldn't give it to him.
After qualifying for the Champions League as well, and reaching a European final, he fully justified it, and it was not forthcoming. So goodness knows how they're going to support Clément. That's my number one worry. But I mean, you look at the team, the left-sided defence needs fixed. Probably centre-half as a whole. You probably need at least 2 centre-halves in the next couple of windows to really fix that. And they're going to have to be a step above Goldson now at this stage. Yeah. We're going to need a left back that's a step, several steps above the current two, unless Yilmaz wants to play his way into four. We're going to need solutions at centre mid, even though we signed two in Raskin and Cantwell that represent good value. I'm just not seeing the consistency or the level of performance that's required in that position. Yeah. And they've both got age on their side at least, but we're going to need something better there. We're going to need a right-sided forward unless McCausland is the next great hope. And even then, the options behind him are not fantastic. Sima, we're either going to have to sign him permanently or we're going to have to replace him as well. And Danilo can't do it all on his own. You know, we're talking about the rest of this season, Shane. If we pick our best 11 every week, we might get good results, but we're not going to be able to because we'd be running them into the ground. The squad as a whole is a mess, but the 11 is the main problem. It's... it's not anywhere near where it needs to be to compete on all fronts. Standard.
It's Butland and Tavernier, and then we know who the other names should be, but yeah, as you just said, they're not good. Well, if by the fucking miracle grace of God we somehow pull this league back and at least make it a competition, right? Mm-hmm. That's fucking amazing. Because what Phil has here is not a title winning side, at all.
Then you've got a fucking miracle worker as a manager, which I said in the last pod as well, Shane. That's kind of what they're depending on. They're not willing to build a structure around good people when they have them. They were fully reliant on Beale working miracles. That's why they gave him the keys to everything. With Clément, really, if he proves it in that space of time and he actually makes us competitive this season, you've got a guy that you cannot let go of, but you need to back him. And you need not just back him with money, back him with the resources that he needs. And really, even if he keeps us competitive until January, it's fully justifiable at that point. You know, it's not something we should be waiting around for. We kicked this rebuild down the line so long, and then eventually it landed at Beale's feet. He got next to nothing for it. He had to rely on player sales to get something out of it. And he was ill-equipped in his own right. Don't get me wrong, I think even with a good technical director and a good scouting network, he might have identified better players, but I think his methods were completely out of reach. But the whole squad management and asset management perspective of it is completely, completely out of line.
When your whole, how do I build a squad methodology is sign former Chelsea youth players,
Or guys that I once heard of 3 years ago.
Yeah. And he plays FM. So it's like somebody that he signed, it's like he signed like FM16. He's like, I remember that guy. He was a fucking wonder kid in that one.
Yeah. He was completely out of his depth, but the argument can go both ways with the two previous managers. Yes, they were out of their depth, but yes, they were also poorly equipped to do their job.
Yeah.
I just don't want to see that happen with Clément again. It can't, that cycle cannot continue. If they want to keep talking about an effective player training model and self-sustainability, there's going to be a few shortcuts. And as long as you do them right, there's going to have to be a few shortcuts along the way for this guy. Because as good as he has been so far, and he's got a proven track record of improving players as well.
Yeah.
So if he's able to get this squad into some kind of passable state, there's your evidence going back to the guy. You just have to.
It concerns. Well, I mean, all of it concerns me. But we kind of touched on this briefly at the end of the show earlier in the week. But our cost base is the same as theirs, almost pound for pound.
It's certainly for. Player wages. Higher.
We spend more than that, but I'm saying but that's part of the problem, right? Our total cost base is almost exactly the same as theirs, yet we spend more on player wages than they do. We have a smaller squad, obviously a less filled squad in terms of, who is the 11, right? And also the seven guys that you have to count on week after week after them to be able to come on and make a difference. They know who theirs are.
On top of that, they've got a relatively young squad.
Yeah, I mean, that's the same thing too. Guys
plus 25.
Well, and how many? Whether it's Lawrence Davies, fucking Dessers, none of these guys. We can't sell them on, No. Right? Like, you can get away with one of those. If John Lundstrom was the one that we had in the squad in that kind of position, you can sustain that, right? Every once in a while, you know, it's like when we brought Ferguson back, right? You know, every once in a while, you can do something like that in the construct that we have to exist in Scotland and in terms of how we need to compete in Europe. It's when the half of your fucking squad is players like that.
It's not FM in real life. I mean, one of my main complaints in the summer was that we got rid of the leadership group, and that's not my main problem. My problem is that the squad management issue was kicked down the line so much we kept on having to rely on the likes of Arfield and Davis and others for that length of time, in the same way that we don't have anybody that's going to replace Tavernier at the moment. So you keep pushing that issue down the line, and then eventually you have to get rid of the entire leadership group all at once. And don't get me wrong, maybe there's some issues there that we were trying to resolve with the mentality of the group or whatever else, but in actual fact, it looks like we've made it worse. I think the guys like Arfield and Davis were actually driving it more than anybody. Yeah. And, you know, you end up with that situation where the remnants are not, they're not good enough to lead the group. And that's something we should have identified way down the line. You need people in every level of experience and different, you know, levels of ability and what they can bring to the squad. And we don't even have that. We don't even have guys that can play multiple positions that can cover others. And between that and the kind of the aging, you know, the way that group's going, where it's all 25 and up. That's probably more like 28 and up. Typically, those kind of squads never do well historically in football, unless they're littered with world class players, which we don't have. We have one or two that really drag it along because they know the standards to some degree and they have the ability to do so. But that's kind of it. It's Butland and Tav for me, and then the rest are superfluous. You know, the Lundstrom, Ruth, Lawrence, Davies, you know, the guys that are 25, 26 and up, Barisic, I wouldn't rely on anybody for leadership qualities.
Well, I think, too, you know, there's something to be said. Look, again, this comes back to the lack of continuity planning or succession planning or whatever the hell it is, right? Mm-hmm. That you have to, you know, there comes a time in every player's career where his value to your club is not there anymore, right?
Yeah.
But how you usher them out the door, you know, how you handle that gracefully is an important part of being able to build the next level of leadership, you know, the next core group that you have. And when you have young players sitting there and seeing some of the stuff that has gone on in the background with players who were part of that core leadership group, how they were treated by people in the executive, in the boardroom, on their way out the door, what motivation does that give you as a younger player to want to step into that role at the club?
Yeah. It does an awful lot for the morale of the broader organization, never mind the playing squad. When you see how people that were legends at the club are treated, it's shameful. But it's a common trend. You're not ruling Rangers with an iron fist. This isn't a ruthless, you know, crusade for things to be much better than they are. It's people that are, again, out of their depth, with obvious insecurities and inadequacies, that just want to throw their weight around. And really, to come back to the whole squad management thing, Shane, it's all intertwined. How you build that group, how the squad dynamic is built, and how the kind of broader organization sees itself, it can be directly linked to our failures financially. It's all important. All of these details are important. And yet we've had people in positions like that with Bisgrove, with Wilson, with Robertson, that don't seem to understand that. They don't seem to understand the value in that whatsoever.
One of the biggest, most important things, and cannot be overstated enough, can't be stated more often, is they lacked, still lack, awareness of their core consumer. And when you can't manage that, then your likelihood of being able to manage any other aspect of the business is pretty fucking low.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's it.
it's the broader understanding of what Rangers is and what standards are, because people want to scream about standards all day, every day, as if that'll just make a difference. Just saying it makes a difference. You know, John Bennett's been one of those people where he's continuously, on the one or two occasions that he has spoken, he's said things about how high the bar is and how great everything is. When you say everything's best in class and you can't back it up, then guess what's going to happen? You're going to have these kind of financial results. You're going to have the kind of results that we have in the pitch. You're going to have failed managers, failed players, money wasted. It's the way that it works. It's the nature of the business. If you can't back up the good shit that you talk, if you can't implement some kind of strategy behind it, then it means fuck all. Yeah. And that's the thing that I'm really driving at. People need to kind of get to grips with that. There's been too many people, and we're leading into something else here, Shane, but there's been too many people at Rangers over the years that talk a good game and cannot back it up. That needs to stop.
Yeah.
Speaking of.
Yeah.
what about Mr. Warburton, eh?
Yeah, I love, you know, every time we get the Mark Warburton story, it's always like prefaced by either him or the person who's talking to him, like, this is the real story nobody's ever heard before. He says this anytime there's a microphone within 100 feet of him. Like, it's the exact same. And like, it's still bullshit. Well, I'm not, whatever fucking else was going on inside the club, that, you know, because people want to point at the Lee Wallace exit and blah, blah, blah. Fine. Again. Yeah. Yes, you're right. Great. But that doesn't excuse the fact that Mark Warburton and Davey Weir quit to go to Forest, who weren't ready for him. So then they came back. We're like, oh no, we didn't actually quit. And the club went, nah, you did. Go fuck yourselves. that's it. And if he wanted, you know, he's doing that thing. It's almost like a Trumpian kind of thing. Like, oh, you know, yeah, I could prove this in court if I wanted to, but I don't want. No, you can't, because he quit.
There's a reason that the only resource that he could pull from was the high and mighty LMA.
Yes.
Never mind the fact that you started a new job a couple of weeks later, eh? Like,
yeah. That we all knew you had.
that might hint towards something, the fact that you were actually trying to leave.
Look, you know, David Weir only one time said something kind of along those lines, and I think somebody, because, you know, with his connections to Rangers, somebody called him and said, David, don't do this. You know, like, you know what happened. Shut up. And he has. He has, and his career's gotten better, I think, you know.
Yeah, it certainly has. I mean, he's found himself in the right place. The one thing that kind of makes me grit my teeth a wee bit, though, is when people suggest Davey Weir for that position at Rangers.
No.
maybe if we had Brighton set up, but again, that requires people, whether it be investors or whether it be executives, to implement that structure around him. Individuals cannot succeed in their own right.
You cannot expect
them to be genius miracle workers that do everything for you. If he came in,
they'd hang him out to dry. You know, exactly. I mean, he would be the person
that they would go.
He is the Rangers man and the voice of the club, and we have put him in this very important position, and now everything is going to work perfectly because he is there. No, really, how are you going to support him? Don't worry about that. He's got a plan. Mm-hmm. He's got a plan, right? That's their hope and goal. They talk just about as well and eloquently and honestly about things as Mark Warburton does every time he gets to talk about Rangers.
Yes, and that's exactly what I'm getting at with it. It's yet another group of individuals, whether you can go back through Bisgrove, Wilson, or Warburton. McParland was another one. It's all the same bullshit. Just stop listening to people that talk a good game and start asking them questions about what they're fucking going to do.
Yeah.
Anyway, something in the last 20 minutes that came out, Shane, which is good old Rangers, right? There's a big interview with John McClelland.
Mm-hmm. Ah, that's good timing.
So where's our current chairman?
Yeah.
Where's the big interview with him?
Yeah.
I wonder, much like the last chairman that stood up at the AGM and said, let's sign more players, win more trophies, win more games of football, and that was his strategy.
Yeah.
Can we maybe stop propping these people up? It's fucking embarrassing that we don't hear from our chairman whatsoever.
No. He issued one statement on the back of being appointed chairman, right? Look, folks, if you want to, it's not like there isn't stuff to review in terms of how fucking, you know, galaxy-brained ideas these fucking people are. Go listen to Bennett's one interview again. Because it's just rambling-ass fucking nonsense, and everything he said that was important, he hasn't delivered on.
Yep. You go back in the last 14 months, 13 months, give or take, we've had a Bisgrove interview, we've had...
the Bennett interview.
When he started in the summer, we've had the Bennett interview, and in between we had the Gibson interview. And virtually everything that they've said in those interviews has just been torn apart. Nothing they say stands up.
No.
So when you go to the AGM, ask them questions about what they've said in the past and why it's not moving in the direction they said it is. That's the main concern here. But yeah, fuck. That's the thing we're tired of here. It's not that everything's shit. It's that everything just isn't working the way that it should be. So, yeah, maybe we need to start thinking about that as a support. Because
AGM's coming up. Take time. Think about what you don't ask about your fucking.
No.
Don't ask about Majors, right? Because Majors is something that will fix itself under the incompetent executive.
Exactly. Or use the CEO forums for that kind of stuff, because that's what it should be for.
Yeah, but when they pre-screen questions and shit like that, I mean, well, you know, what the hell can you do, right? I mean, look, it's a fucking AGM. You're a shareholder there. Get up and ask them a fucking question that matters. And when they don't give you, look, it's the hardest thing. And I swear to Christ, anyone can do it, right? It's not just journalists. Mm-hmm. When they give you a bullshit answer, ask them, what the fuck are you talking about? Right? Don't let them just feed you this shit and then sit back down and go, oh, okay, well, at least No, he tried to answer it. No, he didn't. He tried to make you like just go away, because that's what they want you to do. They don't want you to ask why we're paying them this much money, or where the money is going, or what the fuck their actual plan is beyond just throwing out big round numbers of seats that we're going to add to the stands.
Yeah. It's their professional bullshitters, and if you take just 5 minutes to look at what they're actually saying, you can tear right through it. But yeah, we should be tired of that by now anyway. We should be long tired of it.
Well, you know, there's a reason I should be. It's because we've been doing the show for fucking 11 years. And again, coming up on Tuesday, now that David and Todd will both be back, and honestly, I've probably been doing the show with them now about as long as we did the original show, if I think about it. Mm-hmm. But we're gonna do some 11th anniversary CrowPod shit. I've already had somebody chime in with a pretty good fucking idea that we're gonna... But if you're listening to this on Spotify, there's a way you can just like go down and I'm going to ask you, like, what do you want us to do for the 11th anniversary? And I swear to fucking Christ, look, don't send me crazy Daniel. That's the only thing I'm fucking asking. I will make sure it gets out there. I like listening to it. I like getting high and listening to it by myself still. It's funny. I get it. It will be in there. If there's something else you would like us to do for the 11th anniversary, please, like, if you go down, if you're on Spotify listening to this, there's a way you can scroll down and listen or, like, respond to a question. If you're not, you know where I'm at on Twitter. Come tell me. Like, honestly, I want to do, like, a fun show, you know, big show. Have fun for everybody. We'll do whatever. Plus, it's Thanksgiving week. The second I'm done on Tuesday, I am fucking done. Like, I got my 2 days. Because Thanksgiving is not just Thursday for me, right? There's a whole day of prep before, and then the day of, and then I get to sit around on Friday in a big fat mess, just filling my face with leftovers. So Tuesday is my big day next week to do this shit. So let me know what you guys want me to do. Of course, as always, we'll have questions from you guys, just like we do right now. We got a couple more here. everybody's favorite Rangers Twitter account, Loudrip's Hair, wants to know.
Master of polls.
Yes. Yes. I'll tell you, he's really good at baiting fans of other clubs online. In fact, you might call him a real masturbator when it comes to that sort of a thing. But you want to know who prayed more tickets for Rangers fans, the Elgin chairman in 2012 or the Aberdeen chairman in 2023?
That is a tough one, isn't it?
That's rough. Is
it Elgin was like an extra, like five. It was a few thousand anyway, wasn't it? It was like somewhere between 2 and 5. I don't even know what the ground
was. I can't remember what the hell it was. Well, and credit to him, though, because, like, you know, of course, he had to try to placate his four supporters that they have. Unlike Burroughs, who's trying to be like Billy Big Balls now, like, oh, we reviewed that. No, you didn't. Look, do you honestly think, do you expect anybody believes that you ran like a full, thorough review of this thing when you couldn't handle, you know, managing a ticket dispersion plan in the first place? Come on.
I think he just logged into Twitter and took one look at what was going on and decided to write a few statements. seems about the sum total of his efforts.
He's being rewarded handsomely for that. I mean, he's doing great. Great job. Truly, again, one of the great minds of Scotch football. All you got to do is ask like Graham Spears or Ewan Murray. They'll tell you. He is just doing work that you can't even put into words the great work he's doing. That's how good it is, right? It's just unbelievable, mind-fuckingly good stuff. Like, you can't even explain it. Oh, man. Gary Morton here, good old buddy. Will the new director of football improve the general performance of the exec team by linking the corporate and football operations, or will nothing change due to the guys running the show? I think we've made that pretty clear, Gary.
It's a very worthwhile question, though, Gary. But yeah, we've that's something we've probably done to death, I think.
Yeah,
it is funny though that's the question that you should be asking, though, shouldn't it?
Yeah. Well, again, folks, this is a question you need to ask of the club. We can only sit here and do what we do, right? Because, you know, we're not an official media partner, and they don't want to talk to me. Because guess who's not responded at all to any requests for interviews? Look, I've done this shit, right? Since we've been back doing the show again, what was it, early 20? I mean, it was during COVID, like that first lockdown period, right? So, I mean, we've been back doing this shit for a while, right? I took a year off for the most part, whatever. I've tried to interview these. I've asked, you know, I gave up on getting any of them a long time ago. No, they don't want to talk to me. Trust me. So, again, your job as supporters, as shareholders,
is
to go to the AGM and ask them these kind of questions and make them give a real answer. If the first thought in your head is it's bullshit, then guess what? It's bullshit. So
More than likely,
ask them to give you demand a real answer. They work, they get paid by you. Right? It's not the other way around. We they're not forking money out to us for the enjoyment of watching Rangers, right? No, we're paying them to do a job, and the expectations need to be there from us. They need to be held to them. Last one, it actually just popped up. I was trying to read Gary's question. It took me a lot not to laugh. But our good friend, Ross Hendry, who, you know, I think we all know could do a better job, has chimed in. Wanted to know, if that SMP guy's mouth was a McDonald's menu item, what would it be on a Friday?
I think he already knows the answer, right?
Well, you know, it's funny since it is a Friday. I just looked at my McDonald's app here, and I get 2 for 1 on a fish fillet right now. So I might go grab a late lunch after we get done here.
You don't have a mooth, Shane. Come on.
That guy's ex-mooth is off the chart. I do love him, though, going to the old tried and true standby of who do you support, Partick Thistle.
As if people can't see through that nowadays. As if it wasn't a fucking chewing the fat bit for like
fucking hell. I wonder, I mean, have they dragged his kids out from in the chassis of the bus yet? I feel awful. God. I'm a father first, which is why I'm going to chuck these kids in front of this moving train.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Oh, God. Yeah, I tell you, you know what? Look, the SNP was hoping for a distraction to keep people from thinking about this for the weekend, and now we've given it to them, Danny, because everybody's got a crow pod to listen to this weekend to get through this international break and the hellscape that is the universe on Twitter. So, like I said, Tuesday, for certain, I think the earache's finally going away. I'm finally getting over the cold. I'm kind of shocked my voice has held up this well, even with the limited schedule I've done over the past 2 weeks. But definitely Tuesday with the big show again, 11th anniversary. Let me know what you guys want us to do. I will hopefully do some secondhand news finally between now and then. After, like I said, I just haven't done them because I wanted to make sure I had a voice for whenever the hell I talk to other people. So I'm sure we will have something to talk about, or else I'll just invent something to get a reason to get on and do a show. But Danny will be back. Well, I don't know. I don't know for next week because maybe I'll just have you back on Monday again. Maybe we'll do that. I'm sure we can fleece it. Yeah, we can squeeze another 60 minutes out of tossing Bisgrove around like a wet trackie. So
yeah.
Danny though, of course, don't find him on Twitter at DJ_1872. He's there, but you don't want to. Don't do it.
I don't exist. I'm a figment. No. I'm a figment of everybody's imagination. Okay, keep it that way.
Yeah. Aren't we both? I think I've heard that.
Nobody's ever met us.
No, I'm just Chris Graham and a vocal modulator or something. That's
well, we both are. Obviously.
That's true.
That's the way that it works. He's the puppet master.
God. It's amazing how he does both of our voices at once, too. Incredible. Absolutely incredible. The guy can do anything. Man. Liverpool supporter, nonpareil, man. It's fucking great. Everybody have a good weekend. Be safe. I don't know. Go have fun before we come back and do the 18 matches in fucking 6 days or whatever the hell it is we got to do starting next weekend. So that's it. We'll talk to y'all soon. Bye.
Some people call me the space cowboy. Yeah.
You can't be fucking serious at all.